Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, at a time when we're always connected virtually, yet seemingly disconnected from each other personally, perhaps it's time to relearn the way of befriending, rediscover the joy of belonging. Also this morning, happening around town where compassion meets community, because everyone has value and deserves dignity, helping our neighbors bless up and bloom. And we have another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, July 10th, 2026. This is crazy. I saw this story in the Newswire this morning, and I said to myself, this certainly fits the category of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. So we'll start with this. Researchers at Texas A&M University are sending hundreds of grape seeds to the International Space Station. They will spend 6 months exposed to cosmic radiation, and then, when they return, they will be grown and turned into wine. The joke is that the research project will create a glass of wine that's out of this world, literally. The goal, though, the serious goal, I guess, is to create more resilient, adaptive, and productive plants. They're starting with the grapes they're going to turn into wine. But would you be interested in a glass of wine or a bottle of wine that had been made from grapes exposed to cosmic radiation? I'm not sure. I mean, I'm as big a wine lover as the next guy, but I'm not sure that I would go for grapes that had been exposed to cosmic radiation. You know what I mean? On the other hand, I can think of worse ways to go. So, what else is going on? Among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your TGI Friday morning started, a man is hospitalized. This is a serious story, and it reminds us, it's one of those stories that remind us to use care around fireworks, because there are still, you know, fireworks out there. I know we're past the 4th of July, but people are still, you know. So a man in Northern California is hospitalized after losing his hand while cleaning up fireworks debris from a breach from a beach there in Northern California. It happened on Sunday along Point St. George Beach in Crescent City. Jason Turner says a bomb-like device unexpectedly went off when he picked it up. He was just cleaning up debris from the fireworks the night before. He had his hand amputated and has needed a couple more surgeries since then. He also may permanently lose his vision and his hearing. There's been a GoFundMe set up. But let this serve as a cautionary tale that even what appear to be spent fireworks are not necessarily without danger. So, something to keep in mind. Got to use caution before, during, and after the fireworks displays. Certainly, if you or your kids especially come across any of those shells, any of that debris from any fireworks displays, you know, leave it alone. Leave it alone. Let's see here. This is actually causing some interesting discussion in the state of Ohio. House Bill 492 was signed by Governor Mike DeWine on Tuesday. And you need to be aware of this because it now requires, by law, it requires drivers who are pulled over by police to divulge their name, date of birth, and address. You are required to give that information to the officer if he or she pulls you over. And you think, well, that makes sense. Nothing to see here, right? I mean, but under this new law, anyone in the vehicle that is stopped by law enforcement is required to do the same. Supporters argue that the requirement is about safety. If there's more than one individual in the car, some of those other individuals may have an outstanding warrant. They may be dangerous individuals, and an officer would not know that simply by running the license plate. But some legal experts call the law government overreach and predict it will face constitutional challenges, especially on Fifth Amendment grounds. Why should passengers in a vehicle, if the lawbreaker is the driver, presumably, that's the why they've been pulled over by the police. If it's the driver that's the lawbreaker, why should anyone else in the car be required to divulge any information? By the way, the law also, so this is a matter of debate, but, you know, with this law or this bill being signed into law by the governor, just know that it is the law that if you are a passenger in the vehicle and the officer asks for your name, address, date of birth, you are now required to give it. By the way, the law also clamps down on arguing with an officer that pulls you over. Verbally castigating an officer for what's believed to be an unwarranted speeding ticket, for example, jumps from a mere $150 maximum penalty if found guilty up to 90 days in jail. So, yes, sir. Thank you, sir. You can argue it later in court, but don't argue it with the officer because it could get you into even more trouble. So, definitely important information to know. Yeah. And again, more serious information. As I'm perusing the newswire this morning, I'm seeing all of these really serious, important stories. This is a conversation you must have with your kids. A large number of teenagers apparently are unaware of the dangers that synthetic opioids pose. We're talking fentanyl. A large number of teens do not understand just how dangerous this is. A new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association finds 52% of eighth graders, that's a majority, do not see a great risk in trying fentanyl once or twice. No big deal. Here's a hint. It is a big deal. It is a very big deal. Even 30% of high school seniors do not see a great risk in experimenting, dabbling in fentanyl. Statistics, as we know, show that fentanyl is involved in 3 out of 4 youth overdose deaths. And yet, according to this report, when they asked teenagers, they did not realize, in large numbers, did not realize just how dangerous this is. This is a conversation you must have with your children. Put that there. And a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Don't ask me why they did it, but Portuguese researchers fitted 3 dozen adults. They got 3 dozen volunteers. They fitted them with brainwave sensors and heart monitors, and then they gave them each 2 protein bars. The first one was just a regular protein bar, apple and cinnamon protein bar. And you go, get these at the supermarket, pick them up anywhere. The other protein bar was made of insects. Insect protein. They didn't tell them which was which, and they had them try both. And remarkably, even though brain activity and heart rate spiked during the first bites of the insect bar, most participants chose that one as their favorite. Chose the insect bar as their favorite. And 71%, after the experiment was over, 71% said that they could eat it in the future. Would you? I don't think so. But that's what it says. Researchers conclude that offering free samples and tastings could accelerate acceptance of insect protein as a sustainable food source. No thanks. That's... No thanks. That's... I have no idea. Hope that doesn't become a thing. I may regret even bringing it up. And how about this? Leave you with this. The last first thing you need to know this morning. Last weekend, outside of America's 250th birthday, the big story was the Taylor Swift Travis Kelce wedding, right? Well, if you can't get enough of the wedding of the century, some opportunistic entrepreneurs, I guess we could call them, are trying to cash in on the Taylor and Travis wedding. A website called New York City Garbage, NewYorkCityGarbage.com, is selling actual trash that was collected outside of Madison Square Garden after the couple's wedding. Items include soda can tops, fabric scraps, a single AirPod that somebody left behind. They're getting scraps from the wedding going for about $25 each. You could have a memento from Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift's wedding. And if you really want to be a big spender, someone on eBay is offering a bag of air, a bag of air, I'm not kidding, allegedly collected outside of Madison Square Garden on the day of the wedding. You could have actual air. Love is in the air, and you could own the air. The same air that Travis and Taylor breathed for a mere $49,999.99. I'm not sure which is a crazier idea, a bag of air for 50 grand or an insect protein bar. You decide. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Chance of showers and storms today with a high in the 80s. Showers and storms possible tonight, low in the 60s. Hancock County Sheriff Michael Cortez is making the community aware of a telecommunications scam targeting the county. He says, as in previous scams, the scammer is claiming to represent the sheriff's office. The sheriff says if you receive a call or text from someone identifying themselves as a lieutenant with the Hancock County Sheriff's Office, do not provide them with any information. Authorities say the bottom line is if someone calls you claiming to be law enforcement and pressures you for money or personal information, it's a scam. Get more details on this scam in this story on our website. Ohio is cracking down on catalytic converter thefts by increasing penalties and regulations.
Governor Mike DeWine signed a new law this week, making the theft or receipt of a stolen converter a fifth-degree felony. Under the rules, scrap metal dealers must now require proof of ownership and log daily records with the state. While lawmakers say the strict penalties protect drivers, some recycling groups warn the heavy regulations will hurt legitimate businesses.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Get more on this new catalytic converter law in this story on our website. There was a public reading of the Declaration of Independence in front of the Hancock County Courthouse 250 years after it was read aloud in public for the first time.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Commissioner Tim Bechtel says the Declaration is more than a historic document. It's a reminder that our nation's story began with ordinary people who believed in extraordinary ideals. See video of the reading in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, it has been said on more than one occasion that we have never been more connected than we are right now, but also more disconnected at the same time. It's the great irony of our age, connected to technology, disconnected from other human beings. And we see the effects really anytime you look around. Maybe we need to relearn how to make friends and rediscover the joy of belonging. That's what Parfait Basile is trying to do with his new book, The Way of Befriending, Transforming Relationships and Organizations for Belonging. So I'm curious, what inspired you to write this book? I mean, was there an aha moment when you said, you know, I've got to put this down?
Well, Chris, you said it so beautifully. You know, we are connected yet disconnected. And the data spoke to this so profoundly. And that's really what got me going with this project, was when I stumbled upon the data that said literally that one in three adults is experiencing loneliness in the United States, and every other youth, so our next generation, you know, is experiencing loneliness as well. And studies tell us that with loneliness, this higher risk of, you know, bad health outcomes like increased cardiovascular disease, dementia, and overall a shorter lifespan. And so then as I looked around, you know, doing the work that I do in helping organizations create cultures of belonging, it became really clear over time that, you know, while technology plays a big role in our disconnection, at the core of it, one of the things that we've lost is the art of being in relationships with people who are different from us or disagree with us. And so it really got me going on, okay, how can we relearn in how to do this, how to still be in relationship when we may not see eye to eye on everything? And so that's what the book seeks to address by telling stories of that being possible and also offering tools to navigate those situations.
So what is the approach that you use to address this issue in the book, and what makes that approach unique?
Yes, obviously, there's a lot more details in the book, but high level here, I would say there's three core commitments that are important to doing this well. The first one is this idea of courage, being really courageous enough to both put a finger on and recognizing the storylines that we've told ourselves about others that are keeping us away from staying in relationship and moving towards. And then the second one is the use of curiosity, the commitment to being curious about others and their stories and their lives in ways that can enhance our own understanding of the world and even a better understanding of our own by virtue of understanding someone else's. And then lastly, what ensues usually when we courageously move towards others and are curious about them is that we then experience what I call compassion. Because the things that we understand, we cannot not understand them anymore. And it shapes how we start thinking about the steps forward. And so courage, curiosity, and compassion are the three fundamental pillars of befriending, I argue in the book. And then they translate into some more actionable things that I unpack through what I call the friend framework, which is face yourself, reach out and reciprocate often, inquire first, extend grace and normalize differences and do it again and again and again and again until it becomes second nature.
We mentioned that this is kind of the irony of the modern age, that we are so connected and disconnected. And we think that, you know, it's not always been this way, but has it? I mean, is this something that we have always struggled with on some level?
Yeah, on some levels, I argue in the book that, you know, one of the things that we have not quite evolved out of yet as humans is this tribal thinking, which was at some point in our evolution and development as a group of people was helpful, right? I mean, you wanted to know who your tribe was so that you don't get killed.
Right.
Right. But it's not serving us as well anymore, because, you know, we are missing out when we don't learn from others and gain from what they may have that we don't have. And so there was a study that I stumbled upon most recently that really indicated that in the last 15 years, you know, on a regular basis, we're speaking less words to one another. I think they amounted it to about 338 less words to other fellow human beings. Think about self-checkouts at the stores instead of talking to our cashiers. Think about, you know, the bus stop, instead of talking to someone, you are flipping or looking at your phone, right? So we're speaking less words to one another. And so as a result, we're also losing the skill set of interacting with people, right? So there's a combination. I was just going to say there's a combination of in some ways, we've always operated that way. And in other ways, we're also losing the things that we had acquired over the years.
And that also takes away the opportunity to have those mini interactions with others who are maybe not exactly like us that we meet at the bus stop or at the checkout line or whatever it might happen to be.
Exactly, exactly. And so here's the thing. That's why part of the recommendation that I'm talking about in the book is the importance of being intentional, right? Because we have to work against the trends, because otherwise we know which direction things are going. It's that fragmentation that we are all experiencing. So in the same way, we have to be intentional about our fitness or our diet. It's very similar with befriending. And again, I'm not talking about having 1,000 friends, you know,
right,
and being out and about trying to befriend with everybody. I'm talking about the people who are in our neighborhoods, the people who are in our workplace, in our communities, in our faith communities. How can we be intentional about noticing and moving towards and working through our own inhibitions so that we can establish and find those connection points that ends up benefiting both us and them.
I'm curious, have you struggled with this yourself? I mean, certainly you're not immune from this.
Well, I have struggled with it. And this is part of why this book is so dear to my heart. You know, I've mentioned in the book how my own story as an immigrant has partly given birth to this book, because as an immigrant, as early as I was 2 years old, I had to travel from one place to another and was often reminded that I did not belong, that I was the outsider looking in.
Yeah.
And so that gave birth to this deep ache of, where's home? Where do I belong? And here's the thing that was very interesting when I eventually made sense of it, is that unexpected friendships were the only places where I felt that sense of belonging, right? Someone, we may not have the same race, we may not have the same language, we may not have had the same background or the same country of origin, but by them unexpectedly befriending me, it made me feel like, whoa, I belong here, right? And so that's been the story of my own life. And then what's been interesting is most of us have experienced what it feels like to be on the outside looking in. And so when we step into that role of an unexpected friend, we can not only transform someone else's experience, but we enrich our own as well. And we feel deeper belonging as a result. And that's what the research tells us.
Yeah. The reason I ask that is because this strikes me as the type of book that once you sit down and start putting words on a page, it just flows. You know, it's just one of those things that just keeps going and going and going. So I'm curious, what was the hardest part about writing this book?
Yes, you're correct. You know, as I started writing those stories, they just kept flowing. But you know, what was really hard in writing this book, Chris, was given how divided we are, how do I even begin writing a book that is aimed at all of us? You know what I mean? we all are in such, you know, what I call echo chambers, right? We take our news from this source, we take our music from this source, we only read certain authors or certain publishers and so forth. And my heart was to bring into the same room people from all kind of lifestyles, walks of life, social backgrounds, and tell them, folks, we are hurting collectively, and we need to find our way back to each other, and it will require courage, curiosity, and compassion. And so that was challenging to hit it right, the tone and the stories that would resonate to different people. But it was a fun challenge, and I'm really excited about the product that is there for the audience.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, as they say, the book is called The Way of Befriending, Transforming Relationships and Organizations for Belonging. Do you have a website where folks can get more information real quickly?
Yes. My website is Parfait, like the dessert, P-A-R-F-A-I-T, Basile, B as in boy, A-S-S-A-L-E.com. And there are additional information and even a reflection guide that goes along with the book. And then the book is available everywhere you would get a book, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, you name it. And for those who prefer audiobooks, it's also available on those platforms. And I got to narrate the book, so that is available as well.
Worth checking out. Parfait Basile. Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Chris, for having me.
So happening around town, this really cool program, cool idea, where compassion meets community, because everyone has value and deserves dignity. Helping our neighbors bless up and bloom. Brooke Simsa is the founder of Bless Up and Bloom, and she is with us this morning. So explain what Bless Up and Bloom is. What is this idea, this effort all about?
Well, thanks, Chris, for having me today. And Bless Up and Bloom was created to provide hygiene and wellness for the community, planting seeds of confidence all around our communities. So I started this as I've been a hairdresser for 24 years. Mm-hmm. And after COVID, I said, how do we go to the people? They can't come to us. You know, we got shut down. We were taken back. And how do we do more with all of the places that hairstylists serve in many spaces? It doesn't go unnoticed. So that's how this dream started.
So what do you hope to do through this effort? Kind of explain what the idea is here and the kind of the overarching mission.
So the overarching mission is not everybody gets the chance to feel deserving. And as hairstylists, we can't help everybody, right? But there's so many of us. And I've collaborated with numerous hairstylists all over. And if you have a heart to serve and you want to help kids feel confident in school, to be able to raise their hand with confidence, that have deodorant, that have a fresh haircut, all of the things that you don't even think about that go on every day in our schools.
Yeah.
And then giving them the confidence to be future leaders and focus on their education and not worry about their hygiene, making them insecure.
Yeah. So you started this idea, you have this grand idea. What was kind of the reaction within the stylist community that you were a part of when you take this to other? Because I'm imagining that you kind of run it by some of your friends before you go out and launch this, right? So what was the reaction? What was the immediate reaction?
So I'm going to backtrack you a little bit. So Josh from Heavenly Pizza had asked me if I would do 8 haircuts before school 6 years ago.
Okay.
I asked some of my peer stylists and we were able to do 100 in 2 weeks. We had sign up.
Wow.
When I realized that there was a need and everyone, yes, we do our clients, we love our clients, but there's still more that we can do and we can serve. And when I started to ask other stylists, hey, do you want to help? They were like, don't leave us out. We want to be a part of it. When I realized that being a connector of hairstylists and being able to say, hey, would you want to help? Would you want to help? Would you want to help? There was so many hearts pouring out. I have 2 stylists alone donating 50 haircuts just for this season, a piece. So if you can imagine, the heart is huge. Either you have your own children, you know what people go through. Us behind the scenes, we've done hair for people for their funerals, for their spouses, for different losses, for grief. Maybe they had a house fire. You don't know what kind of trauma that they've been through.
Right.
And we're there to soften that, right? So to bring light to a day.
It sounds like this really kind of grew organically. The yes. Deeper you got into this, the more it grew and you recognize that the need is there, and kind of everybody is like, how can I help?
Yes. And I always explain this, like, there's never going to be enough of us to share and to serve, right?
Yeah.
You get one food truck, you get 20 more. There's different choices. Every hairstyle is the same. There are so many of us all over, and we can all do this together separately, right? So the way we've revamped and built this has been incredible. It was getting to the point where we started with 100. Last year alone, we served 800 students before school in 3 counties.
Wow.
We're adding a 4th county in, and we needed the village. So we're still always looking for stylists saying, hey, I have a heart to serve, and they can be a part of this from wherever they are.
So for those who would like to participate, how do they do that?
They go to blessupandbloom.org, and there's a section. If you press the three lines up top of the website, mm-hmm. you can volunteer. You can be a barber, a hairstylist. What they do is they do this quick sign up. It's super easy for us hairstylists that are super busy and barbers. And you commit to 5, 10, 20 vouchers. And what happens is the vouchers get sent and printed, and at the events, we will be passing out these vouchers.
And I guess I was going to ask, you know, when you launched this effort, but I guess you really have already launched it. I mean, this is something that is kind of an ongoing thing.
It is. And so beyond the Heavenly Hygiene Project that we're doing right now with all the Heavenly Pizzas in four counties, and that will be Wyandotte, Seneca, Hancock, and Wood. So the BG, the Finley, Upper, and Tiffin stores all are collecting items for us. They're all sharing with their stylist, and it's a quick sign up, and we're trying, they're actually racing. Finley is currently at 285 haircut vouchers right now and 300 bags. And so we're growing, right? But we need more people. It's going to take a village to do this. And my goal is for every student that gets a hygiene bag also gets a voucher from a hairstylist. So it's just going to take a lot.
And for those who are not stylists and barbers, not in the profession, can we help out as well to further this mission?
Yes, you can help out as well. So I know this is new for everybody and there's lots of parts, but our goal is to go back to the basics. So if you go to blessupandbloom.org, no spaces, all the same. If you go to that website, there is opportunities to donate to our hub. It gets sent to our hub. We build the items the next 2 weeks. We have already finished 450 bags. Our goal is 300 per county. So we're still looking to fill 800 bags, which the list is on there. Mm-hmm. And you can also volunteer any of our events. So we have stuff going on all the time through August 9th that you can help and be a part of. And what I realized through this, not everyone could cut hair, and we were doing hair outside, but I took the money we were spending on the stylist to serve at the locations, took it out, and this is how we're able to do full-size hygiene kits for these students. And moving forward, we'll be able to teach hygiene classes and just go into the community and be able to help people after their trauma feel deserving and confident. So beyond this project that is super, super important to us, it's just starting a planting seeds in just one person's life at a time.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because you mentioned doing it for students, especially ahead of back to school. It hardly seems possible that we're talking about that already, but before you know it, it would be time to get into that back to school mode. So you're talking about students and helping out students, but this is more than just students, right?
Right. So this program specifically, the Heavenly Hygiene Project, is specifically for K through 12.
Okay.
But all year long, we serve different organizations that are in need. So we recently worked on a grant for recivilization after incarceration. We did a grant for, if you've been in domestic violence shelters, partnered with different places as an Open Arms to be able to provide a hair done, because you need to feel valuable in the workplace and to go back to your job. Well, and, you know, the first thing you look at when you hire someone is how they look. And so building that confidence after recovery, after where you've been, is a very important to help people say, your life's not over. It's just getting started. Let's do this with you.
Yeah. And just from the standpoint, and I don't mean to get really philosophical and really deep here, but we were just talking about this in the previous segment about reconnecting with community and that everybody has value and recognizing that, you know, other people matter. And this is a way of doing that in large measure, restoring people's dignity and giving them that confidence to move forward, whatever their situation may be.
Yes. And, you know, people are like, well, is this just for this person or this person? You could have went through a house fire and have nothing. Sure. You know, you could get a new home through Habitat, but you still need hygiene items.
Yeah.
These things are overlooked and are very important for us to help people feel valuable. And not everyone can cut hair, but everyone can serve. Yeah. Everyone can donate a deodorant. Everyone can donate a body wash. Anyone can help fill these bags. We want to feel purposeful in every space that Bloom provides. And that is our goal, to say, hey, everyone can be a part of this. There's been people that have been through things in their life that are like, they don't know what they want to do to feel purposeful now. Mm-hmm. This whole thing was, let's leave a legacy that money can't buy, that nothing will repair this other than you doing this and pouring this out to other people heals you.
Mm-hmm. And how cool is it that this is kind of a mission? It sounds like, you know, you are definitely have found a calling, a mission. And how cool is it that it really kind of found you?
It really did.
Yeah.
There was a part where I struggled because I'm a caregiver. I was a single mom and a hairdresser for years. I have a daughter who's has a disability. So being in those spaces, I've seen a lot of different things. And I'm like, hey, this is needed. Hey, this is needed. Mm-hmm. Don't count them out, right? My daughter still is bougie, loves to get her nail and hairs done. She deserves that too, right? So then I was like, I want to do this to help everybody that's been in these spaces that, you know, life hits you and you don't know where it's coming from, and just build people up. And we can all do that. I mean, we've all, and if you haven't been, thankful for you, but there might be a time in your life that's going to humble you. And this is kind of where it brought me. And I said, how can we help at a bigger capacity? And my goal is for Bless Up and Bloom to be everywhere. What? There's no reason it can't be. We've built it that way. And as we continue to grow, everyone's like, how can I be a part of it? And I love it that I don't have to say, sorry, you can't.
Yeah.
Anyone can be a part of this. And that's how beautiful this has become.
Yeah. What a terrific program. And again, if folks want to learn more, you've got a website for more information. Where, again, stylists and barbers can sign up to help. Really, the entire community can help. And mention again where folks can find that.
You can go to blessupandbloom.org. There's all the information on our website. We also have a Facebook page, Bless Up and Bloom, and our website's on there as well. You can also help if you want to just buy some swag. We have a little store, too, that proceeds go to our nonprofit.
There we go. We will link that up on our webpage. You can go to goodmornings.net and find it there. And again, Brooke Simsa is with us. She is the founder of Bless Up and Bloom locally. Brooke, thanks very much for taking the time sharing the story. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Leading off the broken news this morning, deputies in Jacksonville, Florida are searching for a man accused of cleaning out, no pun intended, the vacuum cleaner aisle from a local store. cleaned them out of sweepers. Investigative all of the things to steal. Investigators say the suspect loaded 5 vacuum cleaners into a shopping cart and rolled out of the store without paying, taking more than $1,300 worth of merchandise. About unusual things. If somebody comes up to you on the street and says, hey, want to buy a vacuum cleaner? It may be hot. The sheriff's office there in Jacksonville promises to have a dust-free cell waiting for the thief at the Duval County Jail when he is caught. Elsewhere, a 36-year-old man in Fort Wayne faces criminal charges following a bizarre and rather disturbing incident. Christopher Payden allegedly used a kitchen knife to sever his own man parts in a garage and then poured gasoline on them and set it ablaze. What? I'm in pain just thinking about that. When the Fort Wayne Fire Department responded to call of a garage fire, Mr. Payden initially told officers that he had been stabbed, but he later admitted to the self-inflicted act. Although he didn't explain himself as to why, what would possess you to do something like that? Investigators found gasoline, 4 lighters, and a kitchen knife at the scene. He has been charged, despite as bizarre as this is, as strange as this is, really the only crime here is he was charged with a count of felony arson. Of all things. But, ouch! Whew! And weird things in Fort Wayne. Weird things going on in Fort Wayne. And finally, in the broken news this morning, what a way to get busted. A Waymo self-driving car in San Mateo, California, called the cops on 2 15-year-old passengers who were allegedly drinking in the back seat during their ride. The car ratted them out. Police were dispatched after Waymo, the car, reported the teens were drinking. After ratting them out, the driverless car then pulled into a parking lot, locked the doors, and waited for the officers to arrive. Police were forced to acknowledge that the situation certainly would have been much worse had the teens chosen to drive impaired instead, so kudos to them for calling a designated driver, designated self-driver in this case, self-driving car, but underage drinking is still against the law. This is what we get when we get, you know, technology like this. The car actually ratted the kids out. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
It's the WFIN Virtual Car Show. Car show calendar and ride report. Show off your ride, whether it's two or four wheels. Plus, find out where the rides and the shows are happening all in one place. Just go to WFIN.com. It's chrome and horsepower on display online. The WFIN Virtual Car Show calendar and ride report. Thanks to Details Auto Spot, Lorette Chevrolet Cadillac, Fields Automotive Service, and 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Already it has been a hot summer. We've got more hot weather coming next week. And so this kind of jumped out at me. And also, you know, during the World Cup, they've had a lot of hot weather over in Europe. And during the World Cup, all of the Europeans are coming over to the United States for the World Cup games, just been in awe of how many American homes have air conditioning, because they don't have that. It's not as common in many European countries as it is here. Heck, even in many of the stadiums that they're playing at, they've got air conditioning. So it's very unusual for them. But with all of this warm weather, a new survey from The Economist and YouGov finds 61% of Americans expect this summer to be hotter than usual. So it is a good thing that 90% of Americans have air conditioning in their homes. 90%. In-home air conditioning, more common, of course, among people in the South, 95%. Of homes in the South have it, as you would expect. The Midwest is next. 94% of Midwestern homes have AC. In the Northeast, it's only 88%. But again, they're a little further north. It doesn't get quite as hot there. And out West, this surprised me, out West, only 79% of homes have air conditioning. So that was a bit of a surprise. But anyway, that's the breakdown. 69% of us use our AC always or almost always during the summer months. And most of us keep it at 71 degrees on average. So the average temperature. I think it's like 90% of us keep it between 70 and 80. Obviously, if you're going to keep it above 80, why have air conditioning? and below 70 is just too cool. But anyway, so I don't need to be wearing sweaters in the summertime in my house. But 71 degrees on average. Still, even though we love our air conditioning, 61% of us sometimes turn it down or even turn it off in order to save money. And I have to admit, I've done that. I don't want it working too hard. And it's always better, you know, not to overuse your AC to tax the system too much. But saving money is the primary motivation for 61% of us to turn it down or turn it off. 35% will sometimes reduce usage in order to avoid burdening the electric grid, because we hear about that all of the time. And 26% of us will occasionally turn down the AC to avoid harming the environment because of environmental concerns. But for the vast majority of us, when we turn it down, it's to save money. But the bottom line is 90% of us have it. And I don't know how many, but I would imagine 89.9% of us would not do without it. So let me tell you a little bit about what kind of week it's been here in the Oaks household. It's been a little bit crazy. We've had a lot of things going on this week at the old homestead.
Sucky week.
And so my wife, Kyra, who joins us in the studio this morning, has not done a lot of cooking. We've not done a lot of stuff. There's been a lot of quick stuff and eating out and you know, Sloppy Joe's, you know, just real easy stuff.
Grill.
It's not been real creative stuff coming out of the kitchen this week. No. So we decided to kind of dip
into
the archive.
What happens when you don't have a dishwasher?
Yeah, well, that's a whole different story. And yeah, it's been kind of crazy. Anyway, we decided to dip into the archives and bring out, these are, ones from, golly, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's been
doing
a while.
This for a long time. Yep. So we brought some of our favorites back, and my wife, yes, Kyra, is here with another collection of recipes, the best of Kyra's Kitchen.
Yes, these are nice, fun.
They're easy.
We love meatball sandwiches. This one is, of our favorites.
And these are good summertime recipes. Yes. Maybe you got another 4th of July thing going on this weekend or whatever.
Or
here you go.
Just a picnic with your family.
Yeah,
picnic. We're planning a birthday party here for a couple weeks.
So meatball subs.
Yes, so 1 cup saltine crackers crushed, 2 tablespoons of Italian seasoning, 1 large egg lightly beaten, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1/2 teaspoon of seasoning salt, like Lowry salt, 1 teaspoon pepper, 1 pound ground beef, and 1 jar of marinara sauce. And then for the sandwiches, it's 5 hoagie or sub buns, 1/4 cup of butter melted, 1 teaspoon of garlic, and 10 slices of provolone cheese or mozzarella cheese. So preheat your oven to 375 degrees in a large bowl. Combine all the meatball ingredients together. Line a cookie sheet with foil and spray with cooking spray. Form 15 meatballs about the size of golf balls. Place the meatballs 1 inch apart on the baking sheet and bake for about 25 minutes or until cooked through. While the meatballs are baking, warm up the saucepan, a sauce in a large saucepan, that's your marinara sauce. When the meatballs are finished baking, scrape and grease any off the bottom of the pan and place them in the sauce. Slice the hoagie rolls in half. Melt your butter in a small bowl. Stir in your garlic powder. Brush sliced hoagie rolls with garlic butter and top with the cheese. Broil for about on high. Really keep an eye on when you're broiling. That's one of the things. 2 to 3 minutes. My secret, keep your oven door open.
All right.
2 to 3 minutes. That's it. Remove from the oven. Place your 3 meatballs on each of the subs and followed by a large spoonful of your sauce and serve immediately.
There you go.
So really easy and yummy.
Yeah. Meatball subs. Homemade meatball subs on those toasted buns. That's good stuff. We have a recipe for homemade French fries and a garlic mayo to go with the fries.
Yes. So this is 1 to 2 large baking potatoes, russet potatoes, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and 1/4 teaspoon of seasoning salt. So preheat the oven to 375 degrees. Line a baking sheet with parchment paper. Wash potatoes and cut potatoes into thin fries about 1/4 inch. Let potatoes soak in cold water in a bowl for at least 30 minutes. Remove from the water and dry very well with a paper towel. Toss French fries with olive oil and seasoned salt. Spread evenly in a single layer on your parchment-lined baking sheet. Bake for 20 minutes. Turn the oven up to 425 degrees and cook fries until golden brown, about 20 to 25 minutes, and flip those fries as you're going through the process.
All
so just keep an eye on them and flip them.
All right.
Yep.
And then the garlic mayo is pretty easy.
Yes. So this is just 1/3 cup of mayonnaise, 1 teaspoon of minced garlic, 1/2 teaspoon of white wine vinegar or lemon juice, which either one you prefer, and 1/2 teaspoon of yellow mustard. So use the side of a knife to mash and grind the garlic into a paste. You want to make it a little bit more
kind of thick,
smushy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Then whisk together all
culinary terms.
Yes.
Smushy.
Whisk everything together, put it in a airtight container. It'll stay up to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But this stuff is really good, and you'll probably use it for all your French fries.
By the way, Today is National French Fry Day.
Is it really?
I don't know if you knew that or not, so this is perfect.
I love homemade French fries.
Here's a little known fact about French fries. They may very well have been invented in Belgium before France.
Oh, okay.
So we maybe should call them Belgian fries.
Belgian fries instead of French fries?
But anyway,
just a little. French fries.
A little.
Or Belgian fries, whatever.
For French Fry Day. And then real quickly here, we have a dessert, a chewy butterscotch peanut butter cookie bar dessert.
Yes, so this is a half a cup of butter, softened 1.5 cups of creamy peanut butter, 3/4 cup granulated sugar, 3/4 cup light brown sugar, 1 tablespoon of vanilla extract, 3 large eggs, 2 cups of quick oats, 2.5 cups of old-fashioned oats, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 cup of mini chocolate chips, and 1 bag of butterscotch chips. Mm. So heat your oven to 350 degrees, prepare a cookie sheet, spray with your cooking spray in a large bowl with an electric mixer. Combine the butter, peanut butter, sugar, and brown sugar. Beat together for 1 to 2 minutes until it's nice and fluffy. Add in your vanilla extract and egg. Beat together until combined. Add your quick oats, your old-fashioned oats, and your baking soda. Mix on low until well combined. Add chocolate chips and butterscotch chips. Reserve a little bit for the top of your bar. Mix just until combined. Dump the cookie dough onto the prepared cookie sheet and spread out evenly. Sprinkle with the reserved chocolate chips and butterscotch chips on top and gently press them into the bars. Cook for 17 to 20 minutes. Because of the no flour, they will appear to be underdone, and they're going to be slightly gooey, but gooey is good.
Gooey is good.
Yes.
Gooey is good.
Take them out of the oven, place the cookie sheet on a cooling rack, let the bars cool for about 30 to 40 minutes, and then slice and enjoy.
They won't, I mean, after they cool, they're not going to be as gooey obviously,
Yep.
Good stuff.
Yeah, they're going to come together and they're going to finish. I mean, they're just going to be nice and gooey. They're really good.
Yeah. Meatball subs, the French fries, and the garlic mayo, and the chewy butterscotch peanut butter cookie bar recipes are all posted at the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, correct?
Yep.
Correct. We've got it linked up at our webpage. Or you can go there directly and follow Kyra's Kitchen on Facebook at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. That's the correct thing. We've got it linked up at our webpage. So go to goodmornings.net and get that. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. You can visit us online at goodmornings.net. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would also appreciate it if you would take a couple of moments to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. We thank you for that. Coming up Monday on the program, this year marks the 50th anniversary of the Honda Accord, the car that altered the trajectory of Ohio's economy for sure, and in large measure led to the transformation of the entire auto industry. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.